This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
Do Amesh families typically realize that they're abnormal, or does it take outside intervention for something to happen before someone says, hey?
Yeah, I don't think they realize they're abnormal. And I think it's also true for disengaged families. I came from a very disengaged family where mm-hmm. you were told at 18, you better have a plan and get out of the house and you're going to be on your own. And so there was no parental involvement in life, mm-hmm. certainly from adolescence on. Parents just kept their hands off. And I think that sort of set me up for, you know, really bad decisions, because how do you make a decision when you're 15 about what you're going to do to support yourself? And there was no support for college or anything like that. So I think that there's a degree of cluelessness. No matter what kind of family you're raised in, you just think it's normal. You mm-hmm. you think that this is how families work. And maybe you get some insight, you know, if why are you anxious and depressed? Why have you made bad decisions? You talk to other people who say you were raised in a really odd situation, but you don't see it until that happens.
Is there ever anyone in terms of the third party that comes in a relationship to a family like this that the family welcomes with open arms and doesn't always keep it some sort of an arm's length? Can anyone ever fit that mold?
It would have to be somebody that goes completely along with the family story, that humors mom, if we're talking about mom or dad, mm-hmm. and they don't ever have a difference of opinion. They show up for those Sunday dinners and they pat her on the back and say, sure, come in and control my children. And, you know, you don't see people who are willing to do that, because that's mm-hmm. really unhealthy.
And there's a lot of roles that people end up playing in a family like this. It's not just, okay, mom is the leader, we must make mom happy. It's like bumblebees. It's like ants. Everybody has their role. They have to do certain things for this system to function. And if one gives up, if one doesn't do it right, well, then there's hell to pay. And we see the issues that then erupt within the family dynamic. We see it, you know, certainly here, probably with the Adelsons. Let's talk about those roles a little bit that the different characters in those families play.
Yeah, you have the, and again, with it takes multiple kids to have the different mm-hmm. roles. Sometimes you can have the family try to, if they only have the one child, they try to, you know, make it happen. But you usually have the one that's there to comfort and rescue mom. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the family hero, the family nurse. They can do no wrong. They're the golden child because they say yes to everything and are there to meet mom's needs. And then you also have the family scapegoat. And that's the one that tries to individuate, doesn't see that their goal in life is to keep mom happy. And so everything gets blamed on them. And so you can see both of those dynamics in the family, but usually there's the hero and there's the scapegoat.
What about those situations where there aren't a bunch of kids? Can one take on multiple roles at the same time?
Yeah. And it may depend on the day or the week, and mm-hmm. and you can see one person who sort of tries to, I mean, and this again, it's not conscious. They don't know that that's what they're doing, but they sort of bounce around between being the scapegoat, because families like this too, there's this projection process of what's really going on. And a lot of it is this enmeshed parent, the narcissistic parent, is projecting their pain outward. And so they're sort of picking on the kid who's not measuring up. Maybe they didn't get straight A's mm-hmm. that semester. And so the parent is, you know, using this as an excuse to project their own depression and anger.
How confusing is that for that kid? I mean, if you're going from scapegoat to being the loyalist to whatever, I mean, you're really having to pick the flavor of the day and guess the flavor of the day mm-hmm. of the parent that you're trying to please. And if you're wrong, well, then they'll probably be hell to pay. But you're spinning that wheel every single time, hoping that you're meeting the need that they are not necessarily broadcasting that they need met.
These are anxious people. I think it really, I mean, they can be very depressed too and have a very confused sense of who they are and who the parent is. But I see with folks raised in enmeshed families where they're trying to break away and trying to develop their own identity, a lot of anxiety because, as you said, they never know what they're going to get.
Anxiety, depression, I would imagine identity confusion comes from that sort of a dynamic.
Definitely. All of the above.
And we talked about how it affects, you know, romantic relationships here. Take the mom out of the equation, take the dad out of the equation, whoever is the parent that is kind of leading the thing. If you're in that relationship and the mom or dad are not at the issue, does that person ever truly find a way to fit or feel comfortable in that outside relationship without mom or dad playing some sort of role? And if mom or dad, you know, poo-poo it in some way, shape, or form, does that individual, you know, can they stay in that relationship, or do they have to almost sabotage it themselves because it threatens that family bond that they came along with initially?
That's a great question. I recently saw this one just popped into my head, a couple where this almost a Donald Adelson mother-in-law was a factor in tons of marital problems that they were having. And she lived in her son's head, right? So even if she wasn't physically present, they hadn't seen her, her voice was still very much alive in his head and influenced everything. And so he was living his life around trying to keep the mom in his head happy. But you know what? After both of those parents died in a short period of time, it's as if that lightened up, just the fact that they were dead, and his marriage improved. Everything got better for him. So I think sometimes, yeah, eventually they're going to die and there's hope and life can improve. I mean, that sounds bad, doesn't it?
No, it does. Siobhan, it doesn't, because there is something so freeing about, oh, this is going to sound bad. Holy crap.
Choose your words carefully.
Okay. Something about when the dirt hits the casket top.
You're just going right in.
I'm going in, baby. I am going in.
Siobhan, Stacy's going to need a call later on to work through some of this stuff.
Siobhan's already on speed dial.
It's not different than any other day.
But seriously, I had like the worst father in the world, and he fits everything that you were talking about, and he had a mother just like this. So when he passed away, there was just this humongous weight that, I mean, it felt like a physical weight had been lifted. And when I watched that casket get lowered into the ground, it was as though I was rising up as he was going down. It was the weirdest feeling, like, wow, the monster has died. And it, a couple months later, I was a new person. Like the thumb is off of me now. We're good.
I've heard that before. And when people have, even teenagers who live with emotionally abusive parents and their parent dies, and I'm usually prepared for grief and, oh, this is going to be hard for them, but they come in and say, I'm free.
Yeah.
I'm free. And you are going to have a heck of a memoir someday when you have time to write it. I want to hear all these stories.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it makes me wonder, do you end up marrying somebody who fits that profile too? So there's another psychological aspect of it. If you are in one of these families, do you then gravitate towards somebody like that? I'm guessing you do.
Yeah, it's common. I think we've all had relationships where we were replicating something from our family of origin just because we don't realize that that's what's familiar about it. And we have a tendency as humans to go for the familiar and just to feel like this is the way it's supposed to be, which is why so many people marry abusive partners, because they had abusive parents and they don't have the radar to say, oh, this is not good.
Yeah. to where abuse feels warm and fuzzy, because that's what you've been told it is for so long. And if you're that person, if you're the one that's the scapegoat, the one that's trying to fix things, the one that's trying to do that, you're always chasing something, and you're chasing, you know, the emotions of that parent that you're trying to constantly heal with the bucket that's, you know, you can never fix this. It's always leaking. It's never going to get better.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.